You are tuned in to Healing for the Nations with your host, modern-day Samaritan woman, Laura Lee. Laura Lee is a no-nonsense warrior who is a credentialed substance abuse counselor with a degree in counseling. Understanding the heart issues in our lives, she herself is a trauma survivor and former addict, recovering in the image of our Messiah. It's time to apply the soothing balm of the Word to our hearts as Laura Lee brings us Healing for the Nations.
Woman at the well. I come to the well in the heat of the day alone to avoid the snares and the gossiping, wagging tongues that caught into my already broken heart. I avoid the painful ignorance and the lack of loving care. Shame, it is my only covering. My men, they've all thrown me away for those that are younger and prettier than I. The shattered pieces of my life lay scattered all around me, leaving a trail of tears, desperate to be loved. Shattered and scattered is my soul.
And then, he, the Messiah, Yeshua, he came to meet me, at the well. He told me all about myself. He didn't shame me. He didn't blame me. He didn't chastise me. He forgave me. He accepted me. He healed me and he delivered me from all the demons. He fulfills all my hopes of an abiding, undying love that will never end. Hi, everybody. This is Healing for the Nations with a Modern Day Samaritan Woman. Here on Healing for the Nations, we are on a journey together. This journey is to the heart of our Father, Creator, Adonai, in order to prepare ourselves for the soon return of His Son, the Messiah. We must prepare our wedding attire by carefully examining it for spots and wrinkles. And we need each other in order to do that. I have spots and wrinkles on my wedding attire that I can't see. And brothers and sisters, you have spots on yours, which sometimes I can see them. Sometimes I need to take the beam out of my own eye so I can see the splinter in yours. So we need each other to speak to each other the truth and love. Not being judgmental, not being critical, not being prideful. For those of you that have been listeners to this program for a while, you have heard me share about my former mentor. This woman would lock eyes and she would tell me all about myself. She would tell me the hard truths about myself. But I knew that she loved me. And I knew that she loved the Creator. She loved my Creator. She knew me. She spent time with me. She listened to my heart. She had my best interest at heart. So when she told me the hard truths about myself, sometimes I would become very angry with her, but remained very respectful. So I would take what she said to the Father, and I would ask the Father for the courage and the strength and the willingness to be open and honest. And I would ask Him to show me the truth. Was her vision skewed? Or was she seeing with His eyes and telling me the truth in love? And the Father is gentle. And the Father would tell me very gently that she was telling me the truth, that she was pointing out the spots and the wrinkles on my wedding attire because she loved me and because she cared enough about me to tell me the truth. I miss my mentor, and we all need disciples of the Messiah that knows the scriptures and knows the scripture giver to tell us the truth. This is community. This is love. Here on Healing for the Nations, we talk about the hard truths, about what is going on within the body of the Messiah. Here we use the 12 steps of recovery, the book of Nehemiah, and Ezra, the book of Ezra, parallels Nehemiah in telling us the story of how our ancestors rebuilt the broken down walls of Jerusalem. These are our roadmaps in our templates for our journey. We use the whole word here on this show for instructions. The 12 steps of recovery is God-given and it's derived from the scriptures. We have been talking about step 2 and step 3. And step 1, just to refresh your memory, is we admitted we were powerless over our addictions and that our lives had become unmanageable. And step 2 is we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Some people say clarity. I like either. And step 3 is made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. I really like the steps of recovery. Some of us have great difficulty in trusting our Creator enough to turn our will and our lives over to His care. So turning your life over to the Messiah and repenting of your sins is a huge step. Surrendering to Him is the most important step, but is still just the beginning. It does not instantly build your character or make you mature in your faith. Working the steps based on God's word will lead you to a better place of maturity, wisdom, and a transformed character. So I've said this before in previous shows, this is not a Bible study. So I use sometimes a Life Recovery Bible. It's a New Living Translation. It's not what I would recommend for a study of the scriptures, but I would recommend it for those of you that are recovering from addictions, from codependency, from trauma, things of that nature. So I'm going to share just a little bit in, it's on page 588, the beginning of the book of Ezra. Resistance to recovery. There will always be those that do not want to see us recover from captivity. People who were associated with our old lifestyle may fight against the recovery process, just as those within Jerusalem fought against rebuilding the temple. But the most dangerous form of opposition is often found within ourselves. Even though we truly do want to be healed, there is always a part of us that rebels against the good. This does not make us evil, but we need to be aware of this part of our inner selves. We don't have to obey this inclination. When we turn our will over to God, we become people who are no longer slaves to sin, but slaves to righteous living. And that's taken from Romans 6, verse 6 and verse 18. And I've talked before about the opposition that we will face when we attempt to rebuild the broken down places in our lives. Nehemiah, the first 8 chapters, is a really great example of the opposition that will come against us. And believe me, brothers and sisters, I have met much opposition from my families and from people in the denomination that I used to belong to. And even in the Messianic community, you see, it doesn't matter where you go. Wherever there's people, there's brokenness. Wherever there's brokenness, there will be opposition against your endeavors to rebuild the broken down places in your lives. I encourage you to get your hands on a good recovery Bible. I encourage you to reach out to me if you so choose. You can reach me through Facebook, Healing for the Nations with a Modern Day Samaritan Woman. moderndaysamaritan@gmail.com is another way you can reach out to me. I will help you any way that I can. So we're going to recap last show. So last week, I shared a true story of the skinny Thanksgiving turkey and the miracle of the abundant soup pot, along with a story in 2 Kings of the poor widow and her need for support to pay off her debt so that her sons did not become slaves to pay off what she owed. So I talked about the oil, the abundance of oil. And I've also shared about the turkey meat. Like I said, it was just incredible. I had a guest here, and on Thanksgiving Day, we had this turkey that had no meat on it. So the next day I threw the carcass in this big soup pot, and I was praying over it, and Jeremiah Dirt was doing a Bible study, so the word was going forth, and I prayed over this turkey, and when I was taking the turkey out of the pot, my guest and I was absolutely floored over the abundance of turkey meat that came off from this bony, skinny turkey. It was hilarious. And so 3 or 4 people were bringing up the story in 2 Kings. And so those of you that are really struggling with your needs, I encourage you to go back to this place in the Bible that talks about the miracle of the oil. Actually, there was 2 widows back to back that talked about the miracle of abundance. This is day 8 of Hanukkah. And I want to continue to talk about Maccabees. And I'm also going to be talking about Joseph. For those of you that read the Torah cycle, you also have been reading about the life of Joseph and the traumas and trials that Joseph went through, and how Creator God turned that whole story around, and what the brothers meant for evil, the Creator God meant for good. And I can attest to that. I love the story of Joseph. I can identify with the abusive brothers. I can identify with being thrown into pit. I can identify with false accusations and losing my true identity. So we're going to be talking about these subjects on this show. And I'm not going to go into the whole history of the miracles that happened during that time. Like I said before, this is not a Bible study. Rather, we are exploring our own lives and learning how the experiences of our predecessors apply to our own lives. And as I read about Maccabees, I pondered the topic of the Jews, the process of being assimilated. So I looked up the word assimilated, and some of the other words that popped into my mind is normalization, acculturalization, grooming, becoming the norm, and Americanization. I don't know if that's a word, but that's what popped into my mind, was Americanization. So just bear with me, because this is a hodgepodge of different ideas that flow through my mind as I read the Maccabees and as I read further the story of Joseph, and I pondered my own life and some of the words that my visitor had spoken over me, and my own process of becoming who he created me to be. And in my cries to be shown who I am, where I've come from, where I'm going, who he is, the purpose for my life, and what is the core essence of my being. Maybe these are some of the things that you also have brought to the Creator. So I ask for grace as I talk about these different topics. And I want to share with you a portion of 2 Maccabees, the 7th chapter, about the woman and her son. But first, let's explore the definition of some of these words. Assimilate. According to Merriam-Webster Dictionary, the meaning of assimilate is absorb into the cultural tradition of a population or group, to be taken in or absorbed, to become assimilated. And they have this really cool section. It's called the Kids Definition of Assimilate. That states to become or cause to become part of a different group or country. Example, she was completely assimilated into her new country. The word culturalized is an adjective. The definition is deriving from or imposed or conditioned by culture. Acculturalize means to cause a people to adopt the culture of another. So the Jews were, and I may not pronounce this right, so give me grace, they were Hellenized, which means, and it's a verb, which means to become Greek or Hellenistic, to make Greek or Hellenistic in form or culture. As I read the horrors of what our ancestors went through, one particular story stood out. And I was listening to a prayer challenge group that I belong to, and one of the sisters unpacked the story of this woman and her son, and it led me to dig into the story, to read the story for myself. And that particular teaching, I believe, can be found on Prophetic Whirlwind by Only Love Anston. And I will post it on my Facebook page. My Facebook page is Healing for the Nations with a Modern Day Samaritan Woman. So I want to encourage you to look into that particular teaching, because it just made me weep what this woman and her sons went through. So let me read just a little bit of the story, and then we're going to go on break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about these words, the meaning of the words, drawing from the recent Torah study in the life of Joseph. And we're going to look at our own lives. So 2 Maccabees chapter 7, and this is a story of seven brothers and their mother who were taken and compelled by the king against the Torah to taste swine's flesh. And they were tormented with scourges and whips. That's a verse. But one of them that spoke first said thus, "What would you ask or learn of us? We are ready to die rather than to transgress the Torah of our fathers." The king, being in a rage, commanded pans and cauldrons to be made hot. So these seven sons and the mother were tortured and tormented because they refused to ingest swine's flesh. So one by one, the brothers were brought in and they were tortured. They were tormented. They were brutalized, but they stood on Torah. And for time's sake, I can't read the whole thing, but I want to start at verse 15. Afterward, they brought the fifth also and mangled him. Then looked he unto the king and said, "You have power over men. You are corruptible. You do what you will. Yet think not that our nation is forsaken of Elohim, but abide a while and behold his great power, how he will torment you and your seed." After him also, they brought the sixth, who being ready to die said, "Be not deceived without cause. For we suffer these things for ourselves, having sinned against our Elohim. Therefore marvelous things are done unto us. But think not that taken hand to strive against Elohim, that you shall escape unpunished." But the mother was marvelous above all, and worthy of honorable memory. For when she saw her seven sons slain within the space of one day, she bore it with good courage, because of the hope that she had in Yahuwah. Yet she exhorted every one of them in her own language, filled with courageous spirit, and stirring up her womanish thoughts with a manly stomach, she said unto them, "I cannot tell how," I'm sorry, this is very emotional, "I cannot tell how you came into my womb. for I neither gave you breath nor life, neither was it I that formed the members of every one of you, but doubtless the Creator of the world who formed the generation of man and found out the beginning of all things will also of his own mercy give you breath and life again, as ye now regard not your own selves for his Torah's sake. And so the king, thinking himself despised and suspecting it to be a reproachful speech, while the youngest was yet alive, did not only exhort him by words, but also assured him with oaths that he would make him both a rich and a happy man, if he would turn from the Torah of his fathers, and that also he would take him for his friend and trust him with his affairs. But when the young man would in no case hearken unto him, the king called his mother and exhorted her that she would counsel the young man to save his life. And when he had exhorted her with many words, she promised him that she would counsel her son. But she, bowing herself toward him, laughing the cruel tyrant to scorn, spoke to her son in her country language in this manner: O son, have pity upon me that bore you 9 months in my womb and gave you suck 3 years and nourished you and brought you up into this age and endured the troubles of education. I beseech you, my son, look upon the heavens and the earth and all that is therein, and consider that Elohim made them of things that were not, and so was mankind made likewise. Fear not this tormentor, but being worthy of your brethren, take your death, that I may receive you again in mercy with your brethren. While she was still yet speaking these words, the young man said, Whom wait ye for? I will not obey the king's commandment, but I will obey the commandment of the Torah. It was given unto our fathers by Moshe. And you, that you have been the author of all mischief against the, I'm not sure what that word is, Yivarim, shall not escape the hands of Elohim. For we suffer because of our sins, and though the living Yahuwah be angry with us a little while for our chastening and correction, ye shall be at one again with his servants. But you, O godless man, and of all other most wicked, be not lifted up without a cause, nor puffed up with uncertain hopes, lifting up your hand against the servants of Elohim, for you have not yet escaped the judgment of El Shaddai, who sees all things. For our brethren, who now have suffered a short pain, are dead under Elohim's covenant of everlasting life. But you, through the judgment of Elohim, shall receive just punishment for your pride. But I, as my brethren, offer up my body and life for the Torah of our fathers, beseeching Elohim that he would speedily be merciful unto our nation, and that you by torments and plagues may confess that he alone is Elohim, and that in me and my brethren the wrath of El Shaddai, which is justly brought upon our nation, may cease. Then the king, being in a rage, handed him worse than all the rest, and took it grievously that he was mocked. So this man died undefiled and put his whole trust in Yahuwah. Last of all, after the sons, the mother died. Let this be enough now to have spoken concerning the idolatrous beast and the extreme fortune. We'll be right back after break. Shalom.
And your love is devoted. Like a ring of solid gold, like a vow that is tested, like a covenant of old, and your love is enduring through the winter rain and beyond the horizon, with mercy for today.
Faithful you have been, faithful you will be. You pledge yourself to me, and that's why I sing. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. You father the orphan, your kindness makes us whole. You shoulder our weakness, strength becomes our own. You're making me like you, clothing me in white, bringing beauty for ashes. For you will have your bride, free of all her guilt, rid of all her shame, and known by her true name. And that's why I sing. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips. Your praise will ever be on my lips, ever be on my lips.
And your love is devoted, like a ring of solid gold, like a vow that is tested, like a covenant of old. And your love is enduring through the winter rain and beyond the horizon, with mercy for today.
Welcome back. This is a Modern Day Samaritan Woman bringing to you the second half of Healing for the Nations. Before we went on break, we were talking about the words acculturalization, assimilation. We were talking about the Maccabees, and in this second half, we're going to continue to explore not just the words and not just the Maccabees, but also the recent Torah portion, the story of Joseph. We are on step 3 in the 12 steps of recovery, which is making a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of Hashem, which requires trust, which requires knowing Him as a loving, caring Father. As I read the horrors of what our ancestors went through, one particular story stood out, and that is the 7th chapter. It is a story of a mother and her sons and their total dedication to Yahweh and His teachings found in the Torah. And I read this portion, the first half of the show, so I'm not going to reread this. But this family of sons, along with a mother, were tortured for not ingesting swine meat and for being staunch observers of Adonai's dietary laws, Leviticus 23. This family encouraged each other to stand on His word, to look forward to the next kingdom. The mother watched her sons being brutalized, butchered, as she was also. She did not flinch, she did not back down, and neither did any of her sons. I pondered what we are facing here in these last days. I pondered what is being put in our own food supplies that many of us are not even aware of, such as the GMOs and the natural flavoring enhancers. And I just encourage the listeners to do your own research And I think it's really imperative that we understand what we are ingesting. And this is a battle. And as I continue to battle my own flesh and my own appetite, the Father is really waking me up to show me how the enemy is using food as a weapon. And so these are very stealth and sneaky ways of forcing people to eat unclean, destructive foods that are not his foods. We are bombarded by so many things that are against his ways, and we have been acculturated, and we have become brainwashed into thinking that this is a normal way of doing things. I watch commercials sometimes when I am exposed to television, and I cannot believe the amount of food commercials that normalize gluttony. Our entertainment brainwashes us also. So I'm going to share with you a little piece of this article I found in Visual Meditation. And this is not a biblical source. But so I'm going to throw it out there. And we say in the 12-step meetings, take what you want and leave the rest, because there is some wisdom here that I want you to glean from. So this article is entitled Subliminal Messages, How They Work and How They Affect Us. The subliminal aspects of everything that happens to us may seem to play very little part in our daily lives, but they are the almost invisible roots of our conscious thought. And that's written by Carl Jung. The human mind is divided into parts, the conscious and the subconscious mind. The conscious mind works while we're awake and conscious. The subconscious, on the other hand, is always activated, regulates everything in our body, our character, our speech, and receives and processes information no matter what we do. Think of your mind as an iceberg. The conscious part is the tip of the iceberg that you see on the surface of the sea, say 5% of the total part of the iceberg. Well, the remaining part under the sea is the subconscious. Just think how powerful that is. Another simple way to describe it is to see it as a tape player, which plays continuously tapes, which install throughout the course of our life, feelings, thoughts, patterns. The subconscious mind receives information for which we are not aware of and stores them. If we receive information in an appropriate manner, and at a high volume and frequency, then the information dwells in the mind and becomes an important part of who we are. This is why many gurus and lovers of self-help and personal development point out and want to have access to the power of the subconscious. So I just want to interject that we have to be very, very careful about the resources that we tap into. And that's why I said, take what you want and leave the rest onto the article. Because if you put in another tape, then the result will be different. The train of thoughts changes, making us work differently. And so inevitably, results are different. Dr. Joseph Murphy says in his book, The Power of the Subconscious, change your thoughts and change your life destiny. So how do these subliminal messages work? Subliminal messages are messages, phrases, and images that operate below the level of consciousness, conscious awareness, and delivered in a way to be perceived from the subconscious mind. They may be audio, subliminal messages, and of course, visual. For example, we can take the phrase, I am confident, and embed it into a music track where the conscious mind will not hear it clearly, or in a video in which will be displayed for a split second, so the conscious mind will not have enough time to process it logically. In both cases, the phrase is clearly perceivable from the subconscious mind. The constant repetition of this phrase or others helps on rewiring, creating new neural pathways, long thought patterns, and one to think more positively, such as losing weight, having more confidence, etc., etc. The subliminal messages technology exists. This technology has existed for several decades. Many studies have shown that they can produce satisfying and lasting effects, from breaking unwanted habits to improving performance. This technology is successful because it offers a capability to interfere with the guarded subconscious mind, namely the analysis and processing of the logical conscious mind. So I wanted to throw that out to you because it's all about being assimilated, acculturated, and brainwashed into thinking that life outside of Yahweh's way found in Torah is normal. So we are in a process of renewing our mind, of recovering the image of the Messiah within us. And as I have spoken many, many times, a tool, one of many tools that we are using is the 12 steps of recovery, which is actually derived from scriptures. That's the power of the 12 steps. For many of us, just starting to come out of what many call Egypt or coming out of Babylon, this can be a rude awakening and can become overwhelming. But I want you to take heart because he has overcome the world and he will assist all of us in the process of being deprogrammed from the lies and deceptions and reprogram us with the truth found in his word. Fruit of Zion, which is a really great resource. I highly recommend they tap into it. So I'm going to read a little portion about the recent story of Joseph. So the Torah portion is entitled, "And He Came Near." It's Vayigash. I probably butchered that. I do not speak Hebrew, so forgive me. The title comes from the first verse of the reading, which says, "Then Judah came near him." Genesis 44:18. The portion begins with a dramatic unveiling of Joseph's true identity in his reconciliation with his brothers. It then proceeds to tell the story of the migration of Jacob's family to Egypt and the rest of the famine years. This Torah portion begins to set the stage for the Egyptian captivity of the sons of Jacob. Some of you listening are aware of the prophecies found in many of the prophets' writings about the 10 tribes being called back, being called out, being set apart. And this is happening now, folks. It's so exciting. Jeremiah 32:37 says, "I will surely bring my people back again from all the countries where I scattered them in my fury. I will bring them back to this very city and let them live in peace and safety." Ezekiel 11:16-17. "Therefore, give the exiles this message from the sovereign Lord. Although I have scattered you into the countries of the world, I will be a sanctuary to you during your time of exile. I, the sovereign Lord, will gather you back from the nations where you were scattered, and I will give you the land of Israel once again." Isaiah 11:12. "He will raise a flag among the nations for Israel to rally around. He will gather the scattered people of Judah from the ends of the earth." Those are just a few verses about the regathering that is happening. We are living in prophetic times. Some of you listening have been digging into your DNA. and you are discovering your ancestry. Folks are waking up to who they really are. And this is so exciting. Yahweh has slowly been showing me who I am, where I came from, my roots. You see, he wants us to know who we are. And some of you, perhaps like me, didn't know. I didn't know where I came from. I felt like I had no roots. I didn't know who I was. So I cried out and I asked him to show me my roots, to show me who I am. And so this is my journey to the heart of the Father. It is recovering the image of the Messiah and his bride. We have been scattered and assimilated, just like Daniel and his companions, like Esther, like Joseph, like you and me. So who are you? What has happened to you and your family? What snakeskins do you need to peel off to get to the core of yourself, the true essence of who you really are? And how does this relate to step 3? Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of our higher power, Elohim of Elohim, Adonai. So I really like the Torah portion we've been exploring. The story of Joseph, hated by his brothers, jealous, resentful, envious, rebellious. They threw him into a pit to die. And then they ended up selling him to a caravan instead, sold to be a slave. But God was with him. For those of you not familiar with the story, I encourage you to read about this in Genesis. Joseph, seduced by a sexual predator, who says that there are only male predators. This was a female sexual predator. There are actually many females who are also predators. I'm not going to go down that rabbit trail because that is a different show for a different time. So he was thrown into a prison for refusing to bend to her advances. And Yahweh is with him even there in the prison. And he even ended up in a trusted leadership position, even in prison. Wherever he was led, his Elohim was with him and caused him to prosper. And then the famine, then the miracle of the reunion. But the reunion is where I want to focus just a bit. You see, none of the brothers recognized Joseph because Joseph had assimilated into the Egyptian culture. He spoke the language. Maybe he even ate some of the food. I don't know. He wore the clothes of an Egyptian. He wore the makeup and had the hairdo of an Egyptian. There was nothing of his original heritage that met the eye, but he still had the heart of his country of origin. This is happening, folks. People who do not know they have the blood of the Hebrews are desiring to dig into the Hebrew root meaning of the word. They are being led back to the ancient ways. The ancient ways of their ancestors. You see, it's in the blood. The life is in the blood. Some of you listening to me were acculturated into the Christian church, believing the customs and ways of life that do not line up with the Ancient of Days ways. I grew up in a very religious culture that kept the Sabbath, the Ten Commandments, ate according to Leviticus 23, or so we thought. But looking back, there were so many man-made additions that are not biblical. And it has taken me time to deprogram, and I'm still being reprogrammed with the pure truth of his Torah. It is a journey of trusting him and not some man-made doctrine and man-made religion. Finding the God of my understanding as a 12-step culture speaks of, this God of my understanding has the power to change a human heart and renew a broken mind, to cast out the demons, and to restore one to sanity and clarity. It is a matter of trust, which again brings us to the third step of recovery. Recovering the image of God his ways of thinking and doing, which goes against the ways so many of us were taught. Our brother Judah does not recognize most of us who profess to be followers of Hashem due to the strange ways that we have adopted, such as eating swine's flesh or other non-kosher eating patterns, the dressing immodestly, the throwing grace around like it's a license to perform debauchery and get away with it, profaning his holy set-apart days of worship. Yes, coming out of Egypt is a process, but it takes trust, like the mother and son's determination to remain fully dedicated to his ways written down many centuries ago in the Torah. We too need to listen to his words and ignore the voices of those that want to keep us Hellenized and assimilated in this foreign land. Step 3, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Who is your God? Is it your belly? As in Philippians 3:19, their belly is destruction. Their bellies are their God. Their glory is in their shame, and their minds are devoted to earthly things. Who or what are the idols standing in the way of total dedication to him, the one true Elohim? The time is coming, some think, that will be likened to the days of our ancestors, the Maccabees, a revolt of sorts. I encourage the listener to look into the ways we have become duped into assimilating, unbeknownst to us, to an anti-Messiah culture. And Teshuvah, turn back to his ways. Turn your will and your life over to his care. Like Joseph trusted him in all the hard times, he blessed Joseph in a strange foreign land, and he will bless you too if you give him first place in your life. Our next program, we are going to begin looking closer. We are on step 4, making a fearless and moral inventory of our lives, examining how we have assimilated and internalized the lies, and begin shedding the snake skins to reveal the essence of who we really are. Shalom, brothers and sisters. Blessings to you in the name above all names, Yeshua HaMashiach.